like this cow.
It's kind of one of those things. It's like the duck. You know, you see a duck in the water, right? The duck looks like it's cool, but the duck's freaking working hard under the water. Wow, working hard. That's how our place is. We look cool, but we're working hard.
Nance, as soon as you started talking about force velocity curves, I hit the record button because I don't want to miss any of this cool stuff.
Oh, that's great.
I don't know where it picked up, but this is going to be a hell of an intro.
Starts off with me, force velocity.
Yes. Chance Kittle, my dude, you've quickly become one of my favorite people. I think we might have known each other like for what, almost a year now? No, even less than a year.
Yeah, probably less than a year. Like, I met you and then I basically left for like 2 months. Yeah. But yeah. Easily been a great relationship.
Yeah, man. Dude, I look to you as such a resource and a hero, role model, a legend among men and coaches, a spike ball champion. You taught me how to play spike ball.
Spike ball. I won't own up to any of those titles other than probably the spike ball champion.
0 to 10, how good am I at spike ball? Real quick, sorry. I just want to.
0 to 10. Dude, you're pretty good. I mean, we played for like 3 hours. I'd probably give you a 7. We played for a long time. Same thing, though. You know, you got to warm that rotator cuff up next time we play because we haven't played in a while.
That's right. Well, Chance, dude, I'm going to let you give yourself the introduction. So, man, you take your time. You let our listeners know how awesome you are, bro.
All right. I'll do my best. Man, I'm Chance Kittle. I'm a trainer for Athletic Outcomes. I freelance and do some sports-specific training and performance and some rehabilitation. I ran track at Boise State, so that comes with a little bit of my background. A really small town in Montana called Big Fork. And we do have a big statue of a Big Fork in the middle of my town square, so that's pretty cool. Other than that, I'm only, I think, like a year and a half into Austin, and I've loved every second of it. I've met some great people. A little bit of my background, I, you know, just come from a family that really pushed me into running, small high school, graduated with 50 kids. There was an ESPN article on us, about 10 of us from Division I. It's a pretty big ratio. About all of us were nationally ranked in our sports, respectively. One of my great best friends, she actually won USA Juniors in Edinburgh for cross country our senior year of high school. So that's some of our background and a little bit about me. Other than that, I'm friends with Jared. I've trained some fun people and I love just nerding out about anything fitness and health related, whether it's rehab, sports, or really just anything. Education in general too.
What are you most excited about right now?
What am I most excited about in the industry? I think that because of COVID, honestly, it's a great way to step back and get these athletes into a nice kind of training program and get them kind of focused a lot more on recovery too. I think it's cool to see that everyone is now focused deep in hydration, nutrition, and everything. I think that's a big focus that we've always kind of lacked on. And now, because of COVID, we're obviously touching. I do think it's, you know, it's been tough seeing everything canceled and sports in general. I know everyone, it gives us a chance as a society to kind of take a step back and look at and reevaluate a lot of different things in different areas that I think we almost needed to look at to begin with.
Yeah. And I know because we're both in the rehab fitness industry, COVID has definitely hit us hard. Cause we are technically service industry as well. We mm-hmm. depend on working physically with people. Of course, I know you've also worked with people remotely. I'm sure you continue to work with people remotely. But boy, did we have to pivot. You as yourself, on the business side of things, How have you been pivoting and switching up how you work with your athletes?
Yeah, I've been super fortunate. There's a startup in Austin. It's called Ladder. I was shown by Ladder by Jeremy Hills. He's an NFL and sports and conditioning coach. We both kind of pivoted over to Ladder at the end of last year's NFL offseason when we were training together. They just kind of started up. It's kind of similar to True Coach. It's a little more friendly, a little bit user-friendly. They just started Ladder Teams, too, with a lot of great trainers and educators. And it's been a great platform to kind of really connect with a lot of different trainers from all over the world, even outside of the U.S. So I've been using that platform or leveraging it to kind of connect to different clientele or even just general population, athletes, rehab, and just create a program, send it out, and stay connected. So when everything kind of shut down, my flip of the switch was like everyone already had Ladder. We just completely moved over to it. So it was really nice. And now it's kind of a hybrid, obviously, because we're in this weird stage of kind of opening, kind of closing. Some things closed, some things open. So I've been really fortunate to be with those guys right off the bat, honestly.
You talk about, you know, the training and training of athletes. You mentioned Ladder. Now, Ladder's a separate app, right?
Yes.
We're not talking about the speed ladder, which is like the gold standard for speed training, right? That's what you put all of your athletes on when you talk about speed work and getting them fast, yeah. Right? It's all ladder drills. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do not touch the ladder at all, and I do not like the ladder. It's not used for anything that people say it is. If you try to say it's a speed ladder, you should tell me how long that stride is and how hard you're actually hitting that ground for that force reduction. If you're trying to tell me it's an agility ladder, then you're going to have to define the word agility to me and tell me if it's a preconceived direction.
Yes. Is agility more of a
speed ladder? But that was a tough call on the on the ladder. I don't mean to hate on it. If you guys use it, I guess it's great for hit workout if you want to get touch in any circumstance. But hopefully that answered that question. Ladder is a separate app. It is not something I would have on the field.
And that's kind of been the argument now, because people, at least some circles, are like, hey, yeah, we know the ladder. We know we're not going to improve speed there, but it's for agility. And you're like, all right, bro, define agility. How would you define agility? Is agility even something to talk about when you're training
agility,
athletes?
No. For me personally, agility is not something like I can even coach. I showed you that program earlier. I'm not a position coach. I'm not a skill coach whatsoever. I ran track. You want me to make guys fast? Yeah, absolutely. You want me to get guys to turn left? Bread and butter. Turn right, I can't do. So I'm not going to talk about agility. But if you're trying to coach agility, then you have to think about what agility is. And it's not a preconceived notion of which direction. So if I tell someone you're running right, they already know they're running right. There's nothing, there's no twist, there's no agility about that. Agility means it's a change of direction. And you see that in sport all the time, whether it's soccer, football, there's so many change of directions. And these guys don't know it. It's on the spot moment. And that's what agility is. When you see a big ass lineman running at you, you're cutting to the right to dodge him. It's a spur of the moment. It's that 0.1 second. So if you're telling someone to jump in a ladder and you're like in, out, outs, let's go. That's doing nothing for them other than they're hitting minimal force into the ground and they're moving side to side.
There you go. And just from working with you and learning, you know, more about you and you taking time to educate me on all things speed and power. It's all about force production. What do you say when you're talking about getting faster, right?
100%.
And I know you know some. I don't want to get you to spill all your secrets. I don't want that at all. But if we have some young trainers coming up right now, or some athletes listening too, if they're like, hey man, I want to get faster, what's the one thing you're going to tell them to focus on?
Oh man, that's tough. I'll start by saying you have two forces, right? You have the vertical force and you have the horizontal force. In any sort of circumstance, you're going to have a lot of power in that horizontal force, especially in those first 2 to 3 steps where you have about like 60% of that max velocity coming out. So I would say work on projecting forward. I think people forget about how velocity curve works and they just think like, I turn my legs fast, I have to be moving quick. You can turn your legs as fast as you want and that's high velocity. It doesn't mean that you have any force production to go forward. So that's why there's a lot of talk on horizontal, you know, force production, because you have to move horizontal before you can get vertical, or else you're just going to turn those legs and you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. And just, you're better off using a ladder, right?
I think that's huge. Yeah. And if you want to use a ladder, then please put on like a push band or something and measure your force velocity and then have someone sprint and just look at the comparison. And
yeah,
I could be wrong. You know, maybe you have a guy who's a freak and he can put that much force in the ground and that minimal stride, but I don't want to say I'm wrong on that.
Gotcha, man. What's your favorite aspect about training someone, working with the client? What do you love the most about that?
Mindset. I love changing mindset. And that's where a lot of the rehabilitation comes into play is, you know, I've always wanted to be a physical therapist and stuff. Being 23, I'm a little young, but seeing the change of mindset is incredible. If you're someone injured, whether you're an athlete or not, you obviously have this like negative mindset already tied to it. And people don't realize, like, especially as athletes, you're fed so many different kind of concepts of an injury. You see an athlete limp and you already hear the sportscaster, his ACL looks really bad. And you have a guy on the field who's like, oh man, that ankle is terrible. You know, it's just so many different inputs. And then it's the same thing with like the general public too. People don't realize that they'll see all these different practitioners. You go to a chiropractor and you have a subluxation of your L5. You go to a, you know, maybe a physical therapist or LMT and you're just kind of tight in your SI joint. But I mean, there's just so many different inputs and everyone's mind automatically gets tied to something. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, your mind just gets tied to that. So I like seeing the change in mindset. When you have someone, whether it's like, you know, overweight and they just want to lose weight, they're tied to that weight and that's their negative concept. So you see a change in their weight and they start to get happier and, you know, healthier. It's great. Same thing with an athlete. Like, they may be injured or, you know, maybe they just want to work on speed. They're running 20 miles per hour. They're probably a little happier if they're running 23 and outrunning a big guy trying to chase them and tackle them. It's all a lot of the mindset, whether you're looking at it positive or negative. And that's one of my favorite things, is just trying to change the mindset.
That's where it starts, right? I know you're very familiar with the biopsychosocial model and all the factors and stressors that can go into, you know, and more on the rehab side, someone's perception of pain. And then, you know, more in the fitness / rehab side as well, it's, we've got somebody's perception of pain, but even somebody's perception of their own performance. And then I'm certain, you know, people tying their performance with their identity, especially with elite athletes. Are there any recommendations or any tips that you use when you have an athlete, maybe they're toward the end of their career, or maybe they're trying to get that career to the next level, and you see them just tie their worth into their performance so much, which is necessary to some extent, but it also can be detrimental. Correct. How do you approach that situation?
Right. I think there has to be a level of disconnect. Obviously when you get to the elite athlete status, like, what's a good actually answer to this is, like, think about LeBron when that newscaster was like, just shut up and dribble. And he said, I'm more than an athlete. That's already a disconnect in his head. So he knows when basketball's over, he has like some sort of say in something. He has something to do. So when you start tying just to one identity, it's easy for that identity to be stripped, right? All it takes is a rolled ankle and you're out for a little bit. You know, obviously that's not exactly true, but for an extent, you know, you roll an ankle at a track meet or something, you're probably not going to run that meet. And then maybe that's a NCAA, maybe that's a, you know, something big that hurts a lot. However, like, you're always going to be more than your sport. So it's finding that psychological distraction, I would say. Much easier said than done. So much easier said than done.
Yeah.
But
it's mucky waters, right? It's important conversations that need to be had, but they're tough, you know?
They're super tough. And especially as you're an older athlete, kind of nearing your end, it's just one of those things, like, you know, you can't hang on to it forever, but it's bittersweet to let it go. So it's just one of those things, while you're in it, like, let's run it. While it's coming to an end, you know, we're going to do our best to hold on. However, like, no, there's a lot of life left, no matter what. And it's just that's that positive side, right? So if we're looking at it negatively, it's like, I had a bad meet or I had a bad game. I lost sponsors. I did all this. But it's like, yeah, you're also, you know, probably 30, maybe late 20s. Like, yeah, you have a lot of things you can do, and you can't tie it to one game. Look at Cameron Newton. I mean, he got cut from his team and he just took a huge pay cut. However, he just said, he's like, I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it for the respect. He's gunning for it.
Yeah,
because he's more than just a team. And he wants to prove to everyone that he's still that quarterback. But I mean, even if it were to end, I think he would just be like, I'm more than that athlete. And that's always how the elite kind of like dissociate it. And it's the smartest and healthiest way in my mind as well.
Definitely. Because you're going to have a lot of seasons in your life, right? You're going to live a couple different lives.
100%.
As I'm sure you already have and will continue to do so. I know we've talked pretty extensively about physical therapy and, you know, pursuing that, all the pros and cons. You certainly don't have to get too personal on this, but any updates on where your head's at moving forward out of this pandemic that we're in?
I think it's really hard. And for those of everyone that's going to be listening, I'm 23 years old. I basically moved down here to go to physical therapy school and ended up, doing a lot of NFL offseason training. And then, I had a lot of distractors. I was asked by one of the top speed coaches in the world to come train for NFL draft. If you guys know that, it's a lot more lucrative for NFL draft than it is offseason training. From there, I was asked by another speed training group and strength conditioning that trains a lot of Olympians to come out and intern with them. Physical therapy school just got put on the back burner, and maybe it was my fault.
As it should have been.
Maybe it was my fault. I'll probably say like a egotistical standpoint of like, I want to always do it all. And there has to come to that disconnect again. Like, I can't do it all. Like, I can't travel back and forth, go to physical therapy school and make all this work. So at the moment right now, I just finished a master's from UT in nutritional science studies. I'm finishing a double master's right now in sports science and rehabilitation.
Congrats,
and then
man.
I'll be interning at Altus, hopefully next spring, for about 3 months for a lot of the Olympic training for all their Olympic athletes, whether it's like track, field, bobsled. So physical therapy school is just put on the back burner at the moment. And I'm not as tied to it as I used to be. And that's mostly just because of where I'm at as a coach and the opportunities given. I could always come work at Reach.
Always. There's always going to be an open door there for you, for sure.
But I think depending on where we're at, especially in the world, I mean, it's really tough right now with clinicals for, you know, physical therapy students and really health science students in general, getting taken away or getting pulled from clinical sites, having to go different areas, maybe not being able to pick their clinical sites, which would be one of the most difficult things for me, of my connections.
Yes, dude. Yes. That's a whole combo.
That's a different discussion, but I mean, that is one of the big things. Like, if I were to go into physical therapy school and I was not able to pick my clinical sites or use my resources, and I just got sent to a mom and pop, geriatric physical therapy or something like that.
That are fixing spines and they're using speed ladders on their
athletes. Speed ladders, ultrasounds, and rice.
Could you imagine you go to a clinic like that and they're like, hey, we're going to show you how we, rehab our sprinters. Here's a speed ladder. Chance, how about you take him through some of your favorite speed ladder drills?
I would probably fail a clinical, bro.
I just see you getting into so many fights.
I'd come back, the clinical director would be like, I've never seen it. Yeah. It's funny. I've worked to like really, really like discuss, that debate you have with like older clinicians and people like that. And it's funny because like, I'm still a hothead with some things and like, I know that, but I would like to think rightfully so because I've lived through it all. And, as an athlete, as a Division I collegiate athlete, I would not want to go to someone that's giving me a speed ladder to rehab my MCL that I tore running a 400 meter because I know one, it's a short stride. Two, that's not the directions I need to be moving in for 400. So, as a clinician too, I don't want to see that. So that'd be a tough pill to swallow. So at the moment, physical therapy school is on the back burner. It might circle back around, but until I know about the clinicals and stuff, I will be just finishing all my master's degrees and training.
Yeah, man. And yeah, dude, I think, and I've told you this before, like any decision you make is going to be the right decision. Most physical therapy schools suck with clinicals. Clinicals don't suck. Clinicals are awesome. Asterisks. But you have no control. You have no control. Yeah. You get sent where there's a connection. Some schools even forbid you from making that connection and forbid you to reach out and set it up yourself. You have to like request a site, and then some schools say like, oh, if you worked at this certain clinical at this center, you can't go there. But
yeah, you can't even go.
But there are there is some opportunity to talk to that program director, especially if you're somebody that has that connection with a certain site that they're looking for. Maybe there's some opportunity to make a deal there, or something like that. But that's another discussion for sure. That's all fair. We'll talk more about that. But yeah, you can't go wrong, man. I know another big discussion point that we've talked to. I've seen it a lot in PT. I don't know if it's quite the same in the fitness industry and in the performance industry as much, but eating your young, some of the paying your dues, right? I know you just paying love that. I know you love that phrase so much as a 23-year-old that has done world-class shit, having somebody tell you that, hey man, you got to pay your dues first, before you, whether it's something in physical therapy, if you're hopping in that profession too, have you heard that from many people in the fitness industry? I feel like that's more something we say in healthcare.
In healthcare, it's super relevant. And Jared and I, obviously, like, we've talked about this quite a bit on paying your dues and how much I love that phrase. And I think it is just a blinded phase or blinded following, honestly. I'm not going to say school is not necessary, but, I think school is only a stepping stone or the minimal work. And we talked about this quite a bit. In the fitness industry, it's not so much of a pay your dues. A lot of people do, like, I do think everyone has to, learn. And I think everyone should have mentors and, kind of go over a lot of things. However, like, it is super relevant that you'll have that older healthcare professional tell you no because you're so young, before like a fitness professional would. Because fitness professionals is definitely, it's who you know. So if I had an Olympic coach, I was like, this kid is amazing. Like, he can program design. He knows athletes. He knows the biomechanics. And he gave me recommendations. Someone would be like, oh, absolutely. However, that's just like a who you know. It's not a pay your dues kind of situation that is really evident in healthcare.
It's not like, oh, he's got, this person has 5 years of experience. They've done a residency. They can can bill for two therapeutic exercises the same as anybody else if we're talking insurance, right? So that's, I love that about the fitness industry. And it's because it's more, I'm going to get in trouble. It's more authentic, right? All of your experiences that I bet you've had are more authentic, more real, more personable than our traditional sterilized healthcare field of insurance-based. We got to make quota. We don't really have these long-lasting personal relationships with some of our clients in corporate healthcare.
You know what, to like go on that fact, I know like I haven't really talked about it a lot, but going over some of my history and how it turns out to be is I interned really, really young, you know, at Olympic training facilities because I was already there training. I knew exactly what I wanted to be from a really young age, which was a physical therapist. And, you know, that's background from like my family and stuff like that. But I always wanted to be a physical therapist. And I knew really young going to these training sites and training with all these Olympic athletes and professional athletes, elite athletes, that I was already around some of the best in the world. So I might as well hop on it. And that comes back to, you know, that thing of always do two things at once. But however, I always saw school as just that minimal step. I knew school was always going to be there. It's not like it was, the curriculum's not going to change, right? Like curriculum doesn't change in a day. And that's like one of the biggest things. You look at research studies and, you know, new curriculum, it takes what they say like 10 years for anything to really like change and be adapted into the curriculum.
Yeah. They move relatively slowly for sure.
Yeah. So I knew from a young age that if I was going to try to be the best, that I needed to learn from the best in the moment. And I wasn't going to get that from reading a textbook that was written by someone who is 80 years old and, you know, everything about ultrasounds was disproven when I was, you know, 15, but for some reason it was still in textbooks.
Yeah.
So I took it upon myself to really jump on the paying your dues in my mind really early because I thought paying your dues was experience. I thought it was learning underneath people and I was fine with that. I love picking brains of anyone, whether it's, you know, me and you or Olympic coach, a speed coach, or just, you know, a trainer, even if it's just like a fresh trainer, someone will always have a different mindset than you or a different outlook. And if you kind of look into that a lot more, it's developed this kind of perception of different outlooks. Yeah. I think that's just huge.
Definitely. It's real easy. It's real easy to kind of relax on your heels of what you know and of your circle, of the mentors that you look. 'Cause we all have our certain, you know, bubbles.
100%.
So yeah, as long as we keep expanding outside of that, and don't give people too much nocebo language and ladder drills, I think we'll be all right. Drills.
Yeah, and I think it's big and it's evident in healthcare because as physical therapists, as doctors, as chiropractors, as whatever you are, you go through all this grueling school. However, like I always looked at it as, you know, I was going to do the school no matter what. That would only get me so far. A textbook's only going to get me so far. If I read about a strength and conditioning thing and whether it's power cleans or a speed ladder, there's definitely articles on speed ladders about how it increases speed somehow, you know, someone wrote that. However, like I knew the best opportunities to learn and develop myself as the coach or person I wanted to be was to really expand and get uncomfortable as hell. It's not comfortable asking an Olympic coach at 15 years old, can I intern? This guy is looking at you like you're a high school athlete who's decent, like not even like a good or elite high school athlete. You're a decent athlete. But you're asking this, like, you know, 40-year-old coach who's been in this game for 25 years, you know, can I come shadow you for a summer in a different state? And you have to talk to your parents about that. That's uncomfortable. Like, it's not fun. However, like, some of the earlier stuff that I've done in my life developed me into the person I'm in today, whether it's a coach or not. And school was always there. So, like, one of the big things, and I had this talk about 2 weeks ago with another coach, and he asked me about my education. And I kind of laughed. I was like, that's a funny thing to ask, because why wouldn't you ask me about my experience? And he was like, I just want to know if you have any degrees. And I'm like, we can talk about degrees, certifications, or whatever you want to talk about. However, like, what about asking where I've been or why I coach? You know, I think that's more important than saying I'm a walking textbook.
Yeah. And how much debt are you in?
Degrees and stuff. Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm like, there's a lot more to that healthcare professional in front of you. And some of them are, you know, just walking textbooks. Some of them are that, you know, 4.0 person, and that's just their sole focus. And that's fine if you're that person. However, I always saw school as the minimal base. It's always going to be there, and it's always something you have to do. So what are you doing extra to make it more beneficial for your personal development?
Yeah, that academia, man. And it teaches you to be a generalist, to operate at a minimum safe level. And yeah, like I had and if, you know, if you decide to go to PT school, to that level, you're going to have great instructors and great experiences, and you're gonna have not so great. And, yeah, so I'm totally not shitting on PT school. And I think listeners of this show will know that for sure. But I'll shit on the money. Fuck that money. We'll talk about whether the ROIs make sense. Cause there's so much you can do, especially right now. And I'm not going to go off on this financial tangent for too long, but to go in to a graduate school, to get a graduate school degree that's worth in the six figures, and to come out and most standard jobs are not paying to match that.
Six figures, yeah.
Then is it truthfully worth it? Is that investment worth right now? And it is if you have a mission and a goal and a determination, and you know how to use that. But if you're just like, hey, I think this is a cool profession, I don't know that much about what I want to do after I get outside. I just want to, you know, I'm just looking for a quick check, you know, pay my bills and go home. This might not be the right career for you, because you either have to love the shit out of it, or you have to know exactly what the fuck you're going to do to make that investment. I'll get off my soapbox now.
That's so relevant in so many standpoints. And we look at that in the health profession. I'm like, I want you to point out how many doctors are like, I'm going to go to med school to help people, and how that changed throughout. You look at like the med school dropout rate, or you look at physical therapy burnout rate, it's incredibly high. And that's because a lot of people don't go into it with the passion, I think. And a lot of people don't realize how much you're about to get paid. You're about to make shit for all the school you're about to do, and how many people you're going to see, and how many feet you're about to touch, bro. However, like,
yeah, I like feet though, stuff, so I'm like cool with that. But yeah, I feel so that, you.
That's like, that's stuff that you and I are absolutely on the same page with. And it's something where it's like, if I'm going to take on another six figures of debt, I'm going to do it my way, because this is how I want to not only help people, but this is how I want my legacy to go.
Yes.
If you're going into any healthcare profession and you go into it with a selfish mindset, then you might as well be that speed ladder irrelevant.
I love the callbacks. I love the speed ladder callbacks that this happened.
Yeah, you got me started on it.
But no, man, I was looking to end with a legacy question, bro. As we're wrapping up here, as you're about to, you know, hit the air, hop on a plane soon. What's your legacy? What do you want your legacy to be? When it's all said and done, across the many industries that you've worked in, across the many lives that you've touched, all the speed ladders that you've burned in the campfire.
Burned them all. They're plastic, so they just kind of melt though. Man, I think this is actually a question somebody actually today asked me this morning in a group fitness class, and they're just like, what do you want to do with your life? And if you would have asked me, you know, probably last year, year before, I would have had my clear answer. I'm going to PT school. I'm going to open 8 clinics across the U.S. I'm going to develop, you know, a bunch of things. I'm going to change the world of rehabilitation and performance. If you ask me now, a lot of that still hasn't changed. I'm going to change the world in rehab and performance, and I'm going to make it more relevant in different standpoints and introduce different things to a general population. And I say general because I don't want to specialize in anything. If you're an athlete, I'll work with you because I know how to work with elite athletes because I started so young. If you're a geriatric patient, I'm going to work with you because I've worked in geriatrics. I started young for a reason, and there's a lot of goals and stuff I want to leave this world with. And one of them is just a positive influence of change. And I touch on that a lot, is that, you know, change in mindset. Well, if I'm going to change the mindset, there's going to be some sort of outside or external stimulus of change. One of the things is going to be probably in the rehabilitation. That's just something I'm super passionate with, whether that is physical therapy or whether that is I develop a new sort of kind of therapy and stuff that is similar to like an AT on-site, on-field, whether it's I work with Reach and I, you know, have off-season training and I work with kids or something like that. I'm going to leave a positive mark in the mindset of people. And it doesn't even have to be one person, doesn't have to be two people. It could even be the coaches I hang around. And if I can educate a positive change in some sort of circle that goes on to do something, then that's my legacy within itself. I'm not looking for my name to be around in a textbook or anything like that. I'm wanting that smile, that change on whoever it is. I mean, whether it's I change one high schooler and that high schooler decides to go into like physical therapy or become a doctor or something, but he went into it because he just actually wanted to see someone happy or wanted to see that positive mindset. I think that's my legacy right there.
There you go. What more can you ask for, man? What more do you want? That positive influence, that positive change.
A lot. Ice cream.
Yeah.
My own Ben & Jerry's sponsorship.
Yeah. What would your flavor be?
Other than that. Oh, you know what? My favorite flavor is tonight, though, which is Jimmy Fallon's flavor. Mm-hmm. This is like signature flavor of Ben & Jerry's. So I would actually probably have to mess with that.
Yeah.
It's peanut butter cookie dough and something else. So like I would probably do like peanut butter swirls and cookie dough.
Yeah.
And like kind of off play it, but like not too much to where it's still like my favorite thing.
It would be like speed swirls, the Chance Skittle speed swirls.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be good. Or like change the swirls.
Change the swirls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a world, but it's all peanut butter swirls.
Yeah, it's a peanut butter. Yeah. We'll get in contact with Ben & Jerry. We'll see if we can hook that up, man.
I DM them about once a month.
Okay. That's have they responded yet?
No, that's a true story too. I really do. I have DM'd them and I have said I will be the first physical therapist with the Ben & Jerry sponsor.
Is that I would love a screenshot of that.
I will screenshot it.
Yes, dude. I'll
send that. I constantly remind them. Originally, yes. It was gonna be, I think my first DM to them was back in high school when Instagram was first a thing.
Yeah.
And I said that I would be the first professional track athlete with a Ben & Jerry sponsorship. And then now it's slowly developed into, you know, what I want to be as I've matured and grown.
Every month, like you can go back and see the text. I want to be the best speed coach. I want to be the best PT. I want to be the best clinic 100%. Owner.
Yep. Yep. If I'm going to, you know, change the world in a positive standpoint, Ben & Jerry's is going to be backing me, man.
It starts with Ben & Jerry's. They're really good with social issues too. They're holding their weight with some shit.
Those guys are crazy. They get arrested all the time. That's the kind of backing I want.
Yeah. 100%. Chance, thank you so much for your time, man. I'd love to see you in person again at some point when things cool down.
Next month.
Well, maybe. We live in Texas, maybe. So who knows? Yeah. Where can people reach you if they're like, hey, man, I don't like all that shit you were talking about, speed ladders. I want to fight.
Yeah,
let's go.
Please, DM me on Instagram. Oh, you guys can openly text me. I'll give you my number. But
I don't trust these listeners.
at Chance Kittle on my Instagram. You guys can can DM me all about speed ladders and send me research that disproves every statement I've said throughout this whole entire context of school and learning and who I am and racing and speed in general. Chance Kittle, it's my Instagram handle. Super simple. You'll find me there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
go do it. Just, go follow this man.
Yeah. Hit me up. Please tell me about speed ladders. Oh, I'm excited.
Hell yeah. Chance, bro, you have a great evening. Safe travels to you this weekend, man.
All right. Sounds good. I'll talk to you later.
Hit me up, bro.
All right. Peace out.
Peace.